What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. I am Chris DeFrancesco. Joining me, as always, George Rogers. And since we are doing tons of WCW coverage lately, Dean Holzapfel is joining us. What's going on, boys?
I'm here for the long haul.
Oh, I didn't know if that was for sure or not.
Yeah, I stopped coming on because you stopped telling me what the topics were. So I didn't know what to prep for.
Oh, okay. Well, there
so
we go.
I was just like, I guess we're not doing Hot Tag anymore. And then next thing you know, you kept posting things. And that's why I was like, hey, are you ever going to tell me what the topics are?
Hey, jerk. Are you going to ever tell me what the topics are?
Yeah. I mean, come on. We're going to do New Blood Rising every single week.
Oh, my God. 2 weeks. All right. So just to catch everybody up, this week was chosen by the one and only George Rogers, and we are doing Slamboree from 1998, and then we are going to close out WCW for just a little bit next week with New Blood Rising.
I'm surprised that didn't close out WCW permanently.
It wasn't that far off.
It wasn't that long. It's so funny.
It's regarded as arguably their worst pay-per-view ever.
So what was was that 2000?
Yeah,
it was like late 2000.
It had to have been August, right. Okay,
August 2000.
Yeah. So, and this is a company that had that. What the hell was that called? When they put Abdul the Butcher in the electric chair.
Oh my God!
Chamber heart match.
Yeah. Oh. This is a company that did that, which was originally touted as the worst pay per view in the history of the company, and then New Blood Rising happened.
My beer. They're like, yeah. Nobody challenged you.
So it's crazy that we're gonna be doing New Blood Rising, which occurred.
Yeah, it is crazy.
I know, which occurred.
You're welcome.
August of 2000. So we're gonna be covering a pay per view here that was a little over 2 years prior, and business was booming here in May of 1998, and we're going to talk about that. But real quick, before we get into that. We are going, June is going to be back to WWF and basically WWF the entire time. And we are going to be June and probably the very first week of July, maybe. I'm going to try to see if I can pick some sort of really good July pay-per-view to cover. We're going to be doing King of the Ring, and I'm very, very excited for that. So I'm going to go over real quick here.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
What made you want to delve into the King of the Rings?
So King of the Ring is a June pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. So I just figured there's a lot of
I thought it was Hell in a Cell.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, now it's Hell in a Cell. Historically, I've always been one of those people that were a fan of King of the Ring.
Same here.
So I figured, you know what? There's been quite a few really good shows. And some pretty bad ones, like the one we are going to cover from 1995, that was not a very good pay-per-view. That was WWF at a T in 1995.
I can't even listen to the words coming out of your mouth right now. The disrespect.
To who?
Somebody.
Somebody. But no, I figured we'll take a little bit of a break from WCW to go back to WWF and do some really good June-focused pay-per-views, which is the King of the Ring. And then we'll jump right back in to WCW because, you know, that'll bring us into the summer. So we'll have some good shows to cover there. I do want to cover a couple more WCW before we get to October, which we'll do more Halloween Havocs.
Like Greed.
Oh, I can't wait for Greed.
It's the last pay-per-view in the history of the company. We got to do it.
Yeah. So here's what's on the docket for June. This is in order. King of the Ring 93, King of the Ring 95, 96, 98, and 2001.
Halloween Havoc 1998.
Well, don't worry. Will be the peak of our October shows. So I'm looking forward to that. So there you go, guys. Got a big June coming up, and then we will let you guys know about July later on. But let's get to the reason we are here. May 17th, 1998, Slamboree occurred. 250,000 pay-per-view buys, which was one of the top four buys of that year. So let me see right here. Sold Out had 300,000. Super Brawl that year had 325. Uncensored 325. And then Slamboree 250. Bash at the Beach at 525,000 buys, which was the most of 1998, beating out Starrcade 98. However, this show, 11,600 people sold out the Centrum in Worcester, Massachusetts. A live gate of $352,000, which is the third highest gate of 1998 for World Championship Wrestling, behind only, you guessed it, Starrcade in World War III. So we are coming off of a Spring Stampede, which had its fair share of ups and downs. WCW's undercard continues to deliver incredibly high quality matches, while the main events were, let's just say, lackluster at best. So, George, we were at a time here, and Dean, where you could pretty much separate the WWF and the WCW by two things. WCW was an undercard darling, and the WWF was a main event. That was what they were. They were the main event company. Would you agree to that?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like WCW had some undercard matches that were going to be really good that weren't hyped. The matches that were hyped for the pay-per-views did not deliver. Mm-hmm. And that's a very mild statement. Whereas on the other company, you know, they were main event matches you did not want to miss, especially when Austin had the belt, which the inverse of this time was, what was it? It was Over the Edge 98. That was what they had in May at the time.
Yep.
Before they stopped doing Over the Edges for obvious reasons.
Yes.
But that was, what was that? What was that made about? That was Dude Love against Stone Cold,
which was phenomenal for the title. By the way.
And that was where Austin, or that's where McMahon was the ref, and Austin laid out McMahon and then forced his hand to count the three while he was unconscious. That's great.
Yeah, very underrated rivalry, by the way. Dude Love and Steve Austin.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Plus, that led to Dude Love becoming Mankind with the shirt and the tie.
Yeah, very. Yeah, you are correct.
What's this guy doing? No. I'm going to make a good point.
Good.
I think in today's wrestling landscape, it's almost the exact same way now. I know AEW has a lot of problems, but AEW has a pretty decent, like, undercard. It's their main event that kind of sucks.
I would agree with that. I think that's
WWE. You can't top their main event.
No,
but their undercard is shit because their belts don't matter, and they just the same matches every single week. You know,
I you know, it's funny. I agree with that. I mean, I've seen the Usos versus RK-Bro at least 8 times now, and
that's in the last like 5 weeks.
It's in the last month and a half, and it's insane. Yeah. It's insane. But no, you are right. So, you know, we are in the thick of it here in 1998, and WCW is at its absolute.
I'm trying to figure out who in the lower card in AEW is having solid matches, because.
Oh, here we fucking go.
No, I literally want you to tell me.
Here we go.
I personally don't know.
Anything involving the women's division. Have you seen them?
I haven't seen a couple of them.
Top quality.
Now, when you say top quality,
Nyla Rose.
This is top quality.
Hey, we're not talking about men here. Oh.
There we go. We just lost the last five. That's five more down.
Oh my God. So at this point, WCW.
Hey man, nice shot.
WCW is at its absolute peak here, even with their hot and cold booking. Sting's championship run ended up being a lot worse than anyone could have expected. And they finally took the belt off of him the previous month after he's pinned by Macho Man Randy Savage. Savage's reign was also very short-lived, and he lost the title the very next night on Nitro to, you guessed it, brother, Hulk Hogan.
Hey, Hulkster, we're going to put the belt on Savage. Oh, that ain't going to work for me, brother.
That doesn't work for me, bro.
I'll give him 22 hours.
Yeah. Like, all right, we'll have a good little feel-good run. Every yeah. time Macho lost the belt to Hogan in WCW, it was after a one-day reign.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I didn't know that. And that's disgraceful. And if you think
that's an insane stat that I made up, I didn't.
No, I believe it. On this show, there's a double main event with Savage taking on Bret Hart with Roddy Piper as a special guest referee, and a tag team title match with Sting and the Giant taking on the Outsiders. Most recently on Nitro, Nash had broken away from NWO Hollywood and formed the NWO Wolfpack, and has recruited some heavy hitters in WCW as well as the NWO. So we'll be touching on that a little bit later. So they opened the show with a package highlighting the main event matchups for the night, which was standard WCW fare by this point. We are greeted as they come into the arena by the announced team of Shivani, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Mike Tenay. They build up a card, the card a little bit, as they mention that Nitro, that on Nitro, the Giant joined the NWO, and if he and Sting win the tag team title, Sting would have would have a choice to make. They speculate that's what Sting might do before mentioning a challenge thrown out to Vince McMahon from Eric Bischoff to show up at Slamboree for a fight. Obviously, he doesn't, which we know, but this was a massive talking point during the event, and it was so annoying. They show a package recapping that, and then they go to security, quote unquote, security outside waiting for Vince McMahon in case he actually shows up.
So basically just Doug Dillinger around.
Yeah, Doug Dillinger
around a bunch of plant fans.
Yes, exactly. Boy, that was really cringeworthy to watch.
It was bad. It was. Yeah, because there's fans just hanging out by a random fucking door. In worst mass of that arena. Get the fuck out of here.
Right. Yeah. So first match of the night, WCW television title match, Fit Finlay, the incumbent champion here versus Chris Benoit. The winner is Fit Finlay at just under 15 minutes. I thought this was a real solid, hard-hitting battle. Both of these guys were known for, quote-unquote, laying their shit in, and this was definitely no exception. Everything they hit looked tough. Benoit worked from underneath for most of the match. You know, Booker T getting involved in the finish isn't surprising since he was in the thick of that title hunt. But I don't think the distraction took away from the match at all. I thought it was a real, real hot match to start the show. George, what did you guys think?
I mean, I agree with you. It was a banger to start out with. And as they say in the Star Wars prequels, a surprise to be sure, but a welcome one at that.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris, you're absolutely right. Benoit is definitely known for laying his shit in, as George says with a smirk.
Yeah, we know that all too well.
There were a couple scary spots in that match, though, where Benoit went for the suicide dive, and Finlay picked up the chair and just smashed it and threw it at him. Not as bad as the one that Jericho did for the Royal Rumble in 2001, but still looked pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
Those shots, you can tell they were just hitting hard. Plus that tombstone right at the end. Plus like that low drop kick that Finlay did on Benoit when he was distracted by Booker T. Like that looked like it was just boot right to the back of the fucking head.
I mean, look, and I've been on record here numerous times, and I've said this. And, you know, I understand. I mean, it's been a long time, so it's not like it's bad to say. It was just in ring. I never have seen a bad Benoit match. No. The dude was just near perfection in the ring.
He was a real student of the art.
Yeah,
he was. Some say he took his work home with him.
God almighty. So the internet guys are backstage.
I can't make Chris and Wad jokes, but you could talk about Owen Hart falling from the rafters all the time, which is not the worst thing that's happened to Owen Hart. It's that tournament.
Oh shit.
I mean that's true. And the anniversary of Owen's death was what, yesterday? Monday?
Oh yeah, it was. Wow.
Yeah. Insane.
It's gonna be even worse when Adam Cole and Britt Baker win those respective tournaments and they run around as the second most obnoxious couple in AEW.
The first is
Tony Khan and all his fans.
Yeah.
It's
the first of both Young Bucks with each other.
Mm.
Now the Rose and the Heart testosterone.
Oh.
All right. Well, here we go. The match of the night. Brian Adams with Vincent versus Lex Luger. The winner is Lex Luger. The total package at 5 minutes and 5 seconds.
Now, Tom, we got to this.
So I just wrote this was very short and uneventful. It was very uneventful. The story they were pushing was Luger was avenging Rick Steiner, who was injured by the NWO last Monday on Nitro. There just wasn't much to this at all. And I just don't understand what this was doing on a pay-per-view.
Excuse me. And when Lex put him in the torture rack, it wasn't even like the actual torture rack. It was like he couldn't. It was like Brian Adams decided to lay down on his back. It looked like a it looked like he was going for a reverse Death Valley driver.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
I was like, that's not a submission hold, but okay. I guess we're going to roll with that.
No, I agree.
Chris, it's also worth noting that at this point, the main reason for Eric Bischoff challenging Vince McMahon to a match of this pay-per-view was because only a few weeks prior is when DX invaded the scope in Virginia.
Wow. Okay.
Because they brought that up during the video package. Mm-hmm. It was very brief, but Bischoff mentioned something like, "Oh, you can send your guys here, but you know, but you can't answer a challenge. You can't answer a challenge for me," because he read that cease and desist letter on Nitro.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm sure it was a fake cease and desist letter because.
No, he read it on Thunder.
Was it Thunder?
That explains why nobody saw it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hey, man.
During that opening video package, when they were doing it, the word controversy came up and a picture of Brett was there as well. I'm like, was this planned?
Had to have, right? They go backstage where Saturn is ready to say what's on his mind. He says that tonight there will be no gauntlet match because he will beat Goldberg himself and that he has trusted Raven too much. He says, what about Saturn? And right now he starts looking out for himself. I'll get to Perry Saturn a little bit later, but look, I'm not going to put him in like my top 10 of like the most underrated workers of all time. But I'm just going to say that Perry Saturn was a fun guy to watch wrestle. I thought he was damn good. And I felt like he was, you know, he was part of that radical group of the radicals. And I just felt like every one of those dudes in that group could just flat out work. Yeah. But it's just, I just feel like, you know, Saturn just never had that it factor. He couldn't cut a promo. You could tell during this promo, he was reading off of something. It was just very much just being fed to him. Yeah, probably his hand or just right in front of him was a cue card because you couldn't see his eyes at all. So definitely was reading something.
Well, his eyes are usually looking somewhere else anyway. But
So here we go. Probably the match of the night or the whole entire segment of the night. The Cruiserweight Battle Royal was next. It's Super Calo versus Chavo Guerrero Jr. versus Damian versus Cyclope. Versus
Ciclope,
whatever. El Dandy, El Grio, Juventud,
Cyclops,
the legend of Marty Jannetty. Which one of these are not like the other? Kidman, Evan Courageous, Lenny Lane, Psychosis, Silver King, Johnny Swinger. Wow, Johnny Nitro was around back then. Villano the Fourth.
So
go ahead.
I was going to say this was the reason why I picked this pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Was because this is such a hot segment from the moment Jericho comes out and does the introductions to the very end of the Cruiserweight title match. Like that's a hot 15, 16 minutes. That was the main reason why I picked this pay-per-view, mainly because I love Jericho's introductions.
Oh, they were spectacular.
I have a list that I have compiled.
Okay.
All in case our viewer wants to listen. Mm-hmm. So hold on here. So Super Calo, he goes from Mexico. You'll notice his hat never comes off. The master of trick tack, the master of defunk. He is Super Calo. Look at those moves, ladies and gentlemen. You got about a 1 in 10 chance of winning. Maybe. Next from El Paso, Mexico. This guy used to be a great bartender, but it hasn't translated into his wrestling skills. Oh, no. He is the scourge of the illustrious Guerrero family. He is Chavo Guerrero Jr. Maybe a 2 in 10 chance of winning. Come out next from Mexico. This is a rags to riches story. From selling chimichangas on the streets to WCW is Ciclope. Then we got Damien. He can't afford a mask. He's using paint. But sooner or later, he's going to buy a mask. I guarantee you that. Here we go, the winner of the Lou Ferrigno lookalike contest. This guy's also from Mexico, El Dandy. Coming out next is the light featherweight pacer champion El Grio. Now, this guy pulled up in a nice rusted out 68 El Camino Chevy. He's the ugliest man in our sport today. The illustrious Quasi Juice Guerrera. A former champion in many countries. He's going to rock till he drops. Rock, never stop. Marty Jannetty. It's just, it's insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, straight from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I want my lover boy tape back, Lenny Lane. Of course, he got psychosis. He's got a lot of hubcaps in his collection. If you need one, he'll procure one for you after the show.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is Silver King. If he wins 12 more matches, he'll be upgraded to Golden King. This guy is Johnny Singer, Johnny Swinger. You never heard of this guy? I haven't. 0 out of 10 chance of winning. It's fucking great.
Oh my gosh.
This guy's a true shooter of WCW. Does he have a chance? No, zero chance. No way. He's Evan Courageous, ladies and gents.
Oh my God.
And last but not least, representing Viano's 1 through 62 from the Viano family, he is Viano 4. I was pissing my pants laughing at all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he would have continued doing this whenever anybody was competing for a belt that he had. Like in any contender match, just have him come out and just do an introduction.
Yeah.
Didn't matter what belt. It didn't matter if it was a one-on-one match or, you know, a six-pack or battle royal or whatever. Because this shit was gold. And Bischoff had no idea what he had.
I agree, man. And, you know, obviously the story of this match is at the end, we had another guy enter. It ended up being a masked Dean Malenko, who comes in and wins the match at 8:27. And, arguably one of the biggest pops of the year.
Well, he was Ciclope when he came out.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing was, the guy who was El Grio was the real Ciclope, and they just stuck him in another costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was absolutely unbelievable, man. And then, so because Malenko wins the match, he gets to have a cruiserweight title match right away against Chris Jericho, and Malenko wins that at just over 7 minutes. It was another short match, but they were going at such a fast rate that they got almost everything in. That Malenko gut buster is an absolute thing of beauty. Although he did have an ugly landing on this one, but it was still beautiful. Jericho sold it perfectly. They've been going at it for like months up until this point, and this was just a culmination of everything. It was beautiful storytelling. And even with the match being shorter, I think it delivered tenfold. What did you think?
Yeah. The only thing I would have changed about this match would be, I would have made this like a 30 second squash because that, I think that would have built up Malenko a little bit more. I mean, having like a 7-8 minute match is fine, but with that surprise and Jericho not knowing who it is, if you have Malenko beat him in like 30 seconds to a minute, like that, the roof would have fucking exploded more than it did.
Yeah, it was just an awesome pop, man. It also just proved how incredible and over the undercard was in WCW. Those quite few guys, you know, and this is where it goes into, it was good for WCW because it goes into the whole thing that I always give Vince Russo credit for, is that in that attitude era from like 98 to like 2000 2001, every single person that came out of that curtain was over. I mean, who would have ever thought, you know, I'm not taking anything away because I love them, that Too Cool would be probably in the top five most over professional wrestlers in the entire industry in like 2000.
Yeah, but they didn't get over because of him. They didn't get over until after he was gone out of the company. What got them over was the fact that Rikishi was dancing with them.
I know, but it also helped, you know, their theme song was pretty badass.
And Scotty doing the worm.
Yeah, like, so, but that's what I mean. Like, they were just over, man. Like, Taka Michinoku was over for a while. It was just...
Nobody cheered for Brian Christopher.
Yeah, I mean, that's correct. He probably didn't hear anything.
Well, I cheered later on.
Okay.
Brian Lawler. God, you guys got to get your mind out of something here, man.
They go to a Vinnie Mac cam as a white limousine is pulling up to the arena. Doug Dillinger goes up to the car and starts to look in to see who's in it. Tony Schiavone says that if Jim Ross comes out carrying his bags, you know it's Vince McMahon. What a line.
That man was so bitter at the fact that he had to answer to Jim Ross for those few years.
So funny. They go back to the ring where they have a lowered cage for the next match. I just felt like this this whole thing about mentioning Vince McMahon, it's just, it just showed you what a lot of what was just wrong. Like the mindset of WCW was just wrong. Like you're literally just giving WWF and Vince McMahon just endless free publicity on your pay-per-view. And
are you saying that it's wrong to call out another company?
I think it's meaningless. It's wasteful time. I mean, I know Dean has said that so many times.
You know something, Christopher?
Yeah.
It's like you don't get it, do you?
I liked you a lot better when your shirt was off.
I can make that happen.
Yeah, I know.
You just don't get it. Excuse me, George. I'm chastising Christopher.
Oh, yes.
Listen, if you stepped away from you know, the shilling for a second and watched.
I will mute you, which I just did.
That's why, because I thought Mike. I was like, oh, I put it at the right time.
This is why we can't do anything fun, because you guys are too busy fucking, you know, drinking cum.
Oh dear. He calls me a shill, but yet he does post on our group. He goes, I mean, Miss Marvel doesn't look great, or She-Hulk doesn't look great, but you know, shill. So I'm gonna watch it. It was one of the best text messages when Dean just went, you know, shill. It was one of the best.
But here's the thing. Even some of the worst Marvel stuff is still more entertaining than a god-awful Raw episode.
I agree. I won't deny that whatsoever.
I will say one thing to Chris about Bischoff doing these call-outs to McMahon is by him wasting time with that. Like that could have been a four-minute match with somebody else on your undercard.
We totally could have gotten like fucking, I don't know, Buff Bagwell versus Glacier. Fucking Mordecai.
we could have had Marty Jannetty versus
anybody, because it would have been great.
We could have had we could have had Daffy versus Happiness.
He wasn't in the company yet, you criminal.
I was originally going to say something a lot worse.
Oh.
Yeah.
Surprised I still have a Twitter account. I told somebody to drink bleach about 10 minutes ago.
Dear Lord. Next match here is a Bowery death match. I don't know how they came up with these things.
Well, they probably threw a dart at a wall.
Yeah. You know what? You're probably accurate.
Ravens built from the Bowery.
Yeah.
It was built from the Belfry.
Diamond Dallas Page versus Raven. Winner is Diamond Dallas Page at 14 minutes and 35 seconds. I thought the match was a lot of fun, actually. It got a little clunky in the middle of it. These two have had bad blood for a while up until this point.
One was DDP and the other one was Johnny Polo.
Yes, that's correct. And this was on, you know, this was the appropriate blow off, I thought. I like how the weapons were already in the ring and how back and forth the match was as a whole. I thought the Flock getting involved in the middle took some spotlight from the guys in the ring, but I can see why they did it. Overall, I think we can all agree this was neither man's best match, but I thought it was solid for what it was. What did you think?
I popped when DDP hit Raven with the VCR.
Oh, that was great.
And then like when Van Hammer slid up from underneath the ring with a stop sign, I'm like, and people are like, oh, who's that? And they're like, oh, it's Van Hammer. And I'm sitting there like, Van Hammer, why is this even why is this even a thing?
I know.
It's like, oh, he got kicked out of the Flock. And then you know, the guys in the riot gear. It's like, why does somebody like Raven have people in riot gear? Like what sense does that make?
Van Hammer should have headlined a Halloween Havoc against Renegade. I would have been all over that.
Van Hammer is the guy who left him because he was mad that Major Guns had a higher rank than him in his fake military group.
Yeah, well, we're back to the Vinnie Mac cam, and
a bunch of big tits.
It's showing the ticket takers looking at pictures of Vince McMahon in case he decides to show, because you know Vince McMahon is going to walk right through the turnstiles in the arena.
He's going right through the front door with all the other peasants.
And it's so funny, you could just tell how taped this was like 6 hours earlier, because there is not one human being anywhere around any video they're taking right now. trying to show, look for Vince McMahon. It's like, wow, when did you record this? Because you have a sellout of 12,000 people and there's not one human anywhere walking around the entire concourse.
Well, I like how Doug Dillinger walked outside and was like, hey, is he here? And then just like that's it. And then walked away.
First things first, we never found out who was in that white limousine. That was
nobody.
That was the J.J. Abrams cliffhanger.
Nobody was there. That's the thing.
Also, they kept cutting to Vinnie Mac cam, like, oh, he's being outside, he's not here yet. This pay-per-view took place in Worcester, Mass. At 8 o'clock at night. It would have been dark. Why is it still daylight? It's clear this was filmed beforehand.
Absolutely, yeah. Next match is Ultimo, because he did graduate from Ultimate, so that's good. Ultimo Dragon versus Eddie Guerrero. The winner is Eddie Guerrero at 11 minutes and 10 seconds. This was a lot of fun to watch because these two I feel like constantly delivered in every match they did at this time. Guerrero was just so damn smooth in the ring, and everything he did was just effortless. Ultimo Dragon was always fun to watch to me. I thought these two complemented each other extremely well. Eddie and Chavo's underlying story added to the drama, and overall, I'm a huge fan of this match. Going back and having the chance to watch these old pay-per-views, it has actually made me gain a lot more respect for Eddie Guerrero, because I was always one of those guys that was like, Eddie Guerrero, he was really good, but it was just never anybody I really paid attention to. Same thing with Edge for a while, until he was like the rated R superstar. Then I was kind of glued in. But when you go back and I'm watching all these matches of Eddie, it's like, dear God, was he near perfection in the ring? And his charisma was just oozing nonstop. Like, he was spectacular.
And like, that was him toned down.
I know.
You know,
that
was him coming out, Mamacita and Latino Heat and being on the mic, it was just what he naturally brought out as he's walking down to the ring, just kind of looking into the camera, has hair down in his face, kind of motioning Chavo like, hey, come on, you're with me. Like little things like that. The dude was just, you always had your eyes on him.
He had the complete it factor, that guy. And it's such a shame, and it's a disgrace that WCW just didn't realize everything that they had in this era. Just real sad. Enter the match.
It was like they figured every Mexican or luchador they had just should have been in the cruiserweight division.
Yeah.
Just that's what you do. That's all you're going to do. That's all you're going to have matches with. Because Eddie could have had a hell of a run. You could have had him as part of the WCW charge leading against the NWO. Mm-hmm. You could have had any, he could have been a massive piece to that, but we're going to do the Latino World War instead.
It's a shame we only have 7 more years of Eddie Guerrero after this before he, passed away. But, from 1998 to like 2005, what a run that guy had. Just absolutely, legendary.
And that factors in the few months he was fired from WWE also.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Yeah, very good point. After the match, Chavo pushes Eddie away, but soon starts beating Dragon up. He pounds on him into the corner as Eddie stands and watches. Eddie finally pulls him off and slaps him in the face. Eddie dares Chavo to hit him, but he can't come around to it. They go backstage now to where the unappearing Vince McMahon now has his own locker room and a door. So that was just,
And the locker said, Vince, the reason for the ratings, McMahon.
That was great.
I'm telling you, we're only a matter of time before that other company starts calling out Vince, or even Triple H now, since he's back full time.
Oh, they'll call him out now because he can't work. Yeah. So,
I still think even if Triple H can't work, he can still go to AW, beat the shit out of half of that fucking roster and not break a sweat.
I agree. all right, we're going to take a break.
Their children, he's a base king.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish the other half of this pay-per-view. And then, like I said, we'll talk about what's ahead. All right, so this is the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. We'll be right back in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back, Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast, and we are talking Slamboree 1998. And let's continue down here as we get to the WCW United States title match, Goldberg versus Saturn on pay-per-view. Goldberg is the winner at 7 minutes.
I like how you had to preface and say on paper.
Yeah, I know. I thought this was actually not bad. It seemed to me that Saturn was able to take Goldberg a little longer than a lot of people at the time in WCW than, you know, in the matches that Goldberg has had. But on, you know, pay-per-view, you almost, you know, have to do that. Goldberg is such a dominant champion at this point and will go on, you know, to continue to smash everyone that they put in front of him, except Kevin Nash. Surprisingly solid match for what it was.
For good reason.
Yeah, yeah.
He's super shredded.
I agree. George,
can I ask
you know,
a question about Goldberg real fast?
Of course.
Is he one of the worst in-ring performers of all time?
In terms of his status, absolutely.
No.
I think he is the second worst main event wrestler I've ever seen.
Who's the first?
Warrior.
Yeah, I fucking knew it.
Like, Warrior, like, yeah, I mean, Kali, man, Kali's a good one, too. But, like, Kali wasn't in, like, high profile matches.
He beat The Undertaker.
He was a champion.
Well, yeah, that's true.
He was supposed to be in the Punjabi prison match and then was like, wait, I can't climb anything. So they had somebody proxy wrestle for him. That'd be like The Undertaker going, I challenge you to a buried alive match, but Scotty Hawkins is going to wrestle my place.
I challenge you to a buried alive match, but I don't know how to hold a shovel. So
that's a great question in terms of I think in terms of talent, he's the worst main event guy ever, actually, because at least, and this is a big stretch, but at least Warrior had charisma that can get you in the building.
And Warrior could be carried because Hogan made him look really good at WrestleMania 6.
And so did Macho. Man made him look great too. So
8. No, what was Toronto?
Seven. Six. Six was Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at least Warrior had the ability to draw. Yeah, you're out for a second, George. So Warrior could draw. I guess you can say there was a period of time in WCW, Dean, that Goldberg was a draw, right? I guess you can say.
Yeah, I would say so.
Not Warrior-like, but he was a draw.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, like, Goldberg.
Great question, Dean. Damn. I
mean, Goldberg was essentially just the newer version of Warrior. I mean, Goldberg had Warrior ran down the ring and shook the ropes like a fucking idiot.
But like, the Goldberg presentation was amazing.
Yeah, but like Goldberg came out, you know, people banging on his locker. Yeah, Goldberg, you know, walking out with the guards.
Great presentation.
The pyro in his face is coming out. And he comes out, hits three moves, squashes it, like that's it. Like that was the thing for him, and it worked. The problem is the second you got him in a match that goes longer than 5 minutes, he's exposed like a motherfucker.
Yeah, or you put a microphone on him because he just can't talk. No. Like, that's the thing. Warrior. Dude,
why is he cutting so many promos later in his career?
I know. See, Warrior literally made no sense ever. No one has any idea what he ever said, but damn, it was fun to watch.
He mentioned something about flying a plane into a building at one point. And I remember,
foreshadowing.
I remember we went back and listened to those promos, and like Dean and I looked at each other after we heard it. We're like, did he just...
that's a great question.
I mean, you could say he flew a plane into a building, and when I say flew a plane through a building, I mean he had a heart attack and died.
I think that's a good topic for a show one time. Is
what is going on down there, George? Is that an earthquake?
I was plugging in the laptop fan.
But that's a great topic for a show one day is, you know, the worst main eventers ever. And I think Goldberg has to be right up there. And I would actually put him worse than Warrior. And I think that's something we'll definitely talk about. That's a great question. So there's a video package here highlighting Raven and the Flock as he talks about the upcoming pay-per-view, The Great American Bash. Eric Bischoff comes down to the ring to confront Vince McMahon. Like, you know, he's in the building, I guess. Michael Buffer does the introductions for both men. Good for Michael Buffer for cashing these Turner checks. He introduces McMahon, but obviously no one is coming down to the ring. This should have been one of those God moments where a spotlight should have just been walking down the aisle. Buffer says it again with no one coming down to the ring. Bischoff is asking the referee where he is. Bischoff asks if this is a sanctioned event or not. He asks the referee. He asks the referee what to do, and he says he will ring the bell and count McMahon out of the match. That was pretty smart. That's a good heat-seeking move. The bell rings, and everybody in the building starts counting to 10. They get the 10 and declare Bischoff the winner by count out. He celebrates in the ring as the commentators speculate on what may have happened. So stupid.
It's funny. It's almost like Vince said the same thing to him in 2001.
I know. This was actually a very smart play, I thought, by Bischoff. There is that old story that does go around where that Hogan told Bischoff, you know, you better hope he doesn't show up, brother, because Vince will kick your ass.
I heard that.
I mean, listen, we saw what he did to Pat McAfee.
Facts. He punted a football in that bastard's midsection. Mm-hmm. And then beat him 1-2-3, brother.
Son of a bitch.
McAfee got brothered right in the middle of the ring. So
it was probably his idea.
Here, you racist. I'm sorry.
It was probably McAfee's idea too. He's like, you know, it'd be great if you punt a football into my chest. I'll lay down for it.
The punt of doom. Bret the Hitman Hart versus Macho Man Randy Savage with Rowdy Roddy Piper as special guest referee. The winner is Bret Hart at 16 minutes and 40 seconds. Savage won the title the previous month at Spring Stampede and like we said, lost it like less than 24 hours later on Nitro to Brother. At least this should be a better match than, you know, most other WCW main event matches have been. So I thought this was classic work, man, by everyone involved. I thought Piper did a great job keeping order throughout this thing and, you know, was lenient with the rules as they went outside, but that was appropriate. Of course, Savage, you know, had recently joined Nash's Wolfpack, and you could tell they were trying to get that group over big as baby faces. Hart joined the original NWO and worked this match as a total heel.
You could tell he wasn't wearing NWO colors.
I know, right? You ain't getting that pink and black off of him, brother.
The funny thing was, when Michael Buffer announced him, he said he was wearing purple and black.
Buffer. It wasn't strange at this time to see, you know, Hart in that heel position because that's how he kind of was in those final months with WWF. You know, Hart was on the offensive lot for this, and I thought Savage did a great job selling, you know, the hurt knee. I thought it, you know, it wasn't an all-time classic, but I thought it told an effective story. Also, you know, how surprising that Hogan is getting involved in Savage affairs again, which is hilarious to think about.
Don't say.
Shock.
So I'll bring this up.
It's coming out during a Bret Hart match and changing the outcome.
I know. You know, I'll bring this up to Dean because I know he's a huge Savage guy. And, you know, this is the kind of match that everybody was hoping. One of those, you know, dream matchups with Bret Hart going to WCW. You know, it was, you know, Bret versus Hogan, Bret versus Savage. You know, we eventually did get Bret versus like Benoit. But you know, then he got his head kicked off by Goldberg. But nonetheless, you know, this was one of those matches that you thought, man, Bret's going to WCW. I hope he faces off against fill in the blank, Macho Man being one of them. Go ahead, George.
They said
you were going to ask me, and then you.
Yeah, I have to get George this, and then you can get yours.
Oh,
they,
okay.
They bragged about this as being the first time that Macho Man and Bret face off one on one. Lies.
That's incorrect.
Because they faced off in 1987 at Saturday Night's main event in a one on one match.
Yes, so correct. Yeah,
it's not too much of a dream because we've seen this before when these guys were, you know, younger and not injury riddled.
But yeah. I mean, this was more Bret in his prime than 1987, but I mean, still it's from a WCW perspective. You're like, okay, Bret's going to WCW. I hope we see him against this guy. And I thought Macho was one of those guys. Dean, I'll ask you, and you and I have talked about this a few times in the past, a couple past shows a long time ago that, you know, Macho's run in WCW, you know, left a lot to be desired there. Your thoughts on him, you know, flip-flopping between NWO, black and white, then he's a Wolfpack. Like, would you have much rather have just seen Macho be Macho in WCW? You think that would have been over? Like, make him like another baby face like Sting, where he's Mr. WCW, but he's Macho Man.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still can't believe it's been 580 days since Sonny Kiss has been on live TV for AEW. But that being said, I've always stood with this by this statement that I think Savage would have. I understand Savage in the NWO because he was the, you know, he came from, you know, WWF. You know, he was part of that golden age of wrestling. But I've always felt that Savage would have fit perfectly with, like, fighting alongside DDP and Sting.
Mm-hmm.
Take down the NWO. That's where I felt he should have been. He should have been a WCW guy. And I think that was a massive drop ball.
Mm-hmm.
Or ball drop, I should say.
Yeah.
And like Bret Hart, I think his career just went down the drain for the most part in WCW. I mean, he had a couple good feuds when he first got there before the NWO, you know, kind of started. But once that NWO started, I mean, let's be honest, once the NWO started, as pivotal as they were to the industry, you know, that was already the slow death of WCW anyway. So, but yeah, Savage should have been Savage the whole time. And maybe eventually transition into that, like, you know, Macho Madness character that he had, you know, towards the end of his tenure, which I think was, I thought that was a pretty cool version of him, you know, of Macho Man, you know, with like Miss Madness and Gorgeous George and stuff like that. So, but he should have never been in the NWO. He should have never been the Wolfpack. Never should have been like that. The Wolfpack should have been like Hall and Nash, and like one or two other guys that were from the early incarnation of the NWO that broke off, and they, that could have been a good feud there. But I mean, listen, hey, not everybody can be the LWO.
That's accurate. Not everybody can. Here we are. After the match, Piper picks up whatever Savage had and leaves the ring with it. Don't know what that was. Hart mocks the crowd on the way out and spits in the face of Savage. Savage continues to sell the knee as Elizabeth looks on from ringside. So we get to the second half of the main event, the double main event here at Slamboree. WCW tag team title match, the Outsiders, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash with Dusty Rhodes versus the Giant and Sting. The winners and new WCW tag team champions, Sting and the Giant, at just under 15 minutes. So my thoughts on this one is, you know, it's a rare WCW show where I thought both marquee main event matches delivered. I thought the crowd was on fire for this match and was very, very firmly behind the Wolfpack. You know, Hall and Nash worked great as a team as always. Hall looked to have no ring rust from the long layover. Sting did a really good job working underneath and took a lot of punishment for the majority of the match. The big hot tag, no pun intended, was really solid with the Giant when he came in and hit the Outsiders with everything he had. Hall turned on Nash to end the match, and that was the shocking conclusion since they have been together since joining the company a few years back. It felt like a real betrayal, which was really cool. Overall, it was a solid way, I thought, to end the show. Like, now the question going into that next Nitro was going to be, what will Sting end up doing? Also, it came out that Nash suffered a legit concussion from the belt shot that Scott Hall gave him. So it was like a legit real betrayal.
Nash probably told Hall to, like, he's like, hey, I want you to actually hit me.
Lay it in. After the match, Hall, Rhodes, and the Giant all embrace in the ring and leave Nash laying. Little do we know, Nash is literally laying there, can just knocked out. Sting is standing shocked in the corner as the referee.
With that dumb, confused look.
I know. Yeah. Sting is standing shocked in the corner as the referee hands him his belt. Hall drapes a Wolfpack shirt on Nash's head as Sting doesn't know what to do. The show goes off the air with the Giant practically begging Sting to join NWO Hollywood. Your thoughts on the main event?
If I'm Sting, and concerning all the bullshit that went on a year ago with the NWO, after that, after they win that match, I'm pulling at my bat and I'm laying out the entire NWO and walking away with both belts. That's what I'm doing. If I'm staying, but I didn't book this show. Obviously I was,
who booked this shit? Yeah.
But you know, cause it was long after this that Sting had joined the Wolfpack, which is the biggest mistake in fucking Sting's history. Joker Sting was a better idea than Sting joined the Wolfpack. Mm-hmm. That being said, I did like the Wolfpack face paint on him. Mm-hmm. And my Wolfpack Sting pop is like
$100. Spaghetti Sting.
Hey, it was
his nickname.
I like that a lot better than
the red face paint was like real dark, so everyone thought it was spaghetti sauce.
Yeah. Remember when he had his goatee?
Oh.
If Sting didn't have face paint, he had sunglasses and a goatee. Mm.
Yeah, that was a pilled up drunk Sting.
It was a solid tag match, but as we talk about, it's just felt like something. I mean, yeah, like Hall turning on Nash was a big shock,
mm-hmm.
but same point, this is your main event, and it does, and your entire undercard looks better than this match.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great point. I agree. I think the betrayal actually ended up being a much bigger deal for this show than what's Sting going to do. And they've been selling the entire night, what is Sting going to end up doing? But then again, when you see what happens with the outsiders, you're like, oh, that's actually a much bigger deal in the grand scheme of things.
Like, there shouldn't even have been a decision for Sting to be like, oh, am I going to join the NWO or am I going to say WCW? It's like, motherfucker, you're feuding with them for an entire year.
Yeah.
Why would you join the NWO? Why is that even crossing your head?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agreed. I thought this was a real solid show from top to bottom. Normally, WCW would probably under-deliver in the main events, but I thought they both produced well here. They had some quality undercard matches as well, and the show didn't stall much, which was very rare for WCW of this time. I thought having a cage match right in the middle of the show was a little bit odd and would have preferred it probably in the start of the show, maybe the second match, but that's just worthless nitpicking on my end. The big storylines coming out of the show were Malenko making a return, winning the cruiserweight title, Bischoff calling out McMahon, and McMahon, of course, no showing. And then obviously the turn of Scott Hall.
Took his ball and went home.
Yeah.
You're also skipping the fact that Mortis unmasked and revealed himself as Canyon.
Oh. At
this point was also showing up unmasked to the events as like a hot dog vendor or a drink vendor and attacking members of the flock.
Mm-hmm. Who better than Canyon?
He pulled his mask off to Zero Pop because nobody knew who he was.
Yeah.
Until Shivani was like, hey, he's that vendor that we keep seeing attacking the flock.
I was actually a big fan of Canyon. I thought he's a really good worker.
I was too. And then I started watching New Blood Rising.
That's a good point. As far as the McMahon thing goes, he was never obviously going to show up to the show. It was, I thought, good marketing by Bischoff, though, because it got the company good publicity. It also gave the other company good publicity. Hall turning his back on Nash was shocking since, you know, they were the outsiders. They've been together for everything, the click. The crowd was also into everything that they did, and that helped out a lot to me. All in all, it was real solid, and I give this show about a 7.5, 8 out of 10. I really do. For a, you know, again, all things considered for WCW, this was a great show, like a really good show. How about you, George?
Yeah, the wheels were off by this point. Like the wheels mm-hmm. were, I mean, they weren't completely off, but they at least lost one after that Starcade botch.
Yeah.
You know, Macho losing the title after, you know, a day of holding it. You know, all the other storylines is kind of lackluster, but this event pulled it off. Like this was a rare hit for WCW.
Yeah.
Where
it
shows that they were capable of doing it.
I mean, even like the worst match of the night was Luger and Crush, and
that wasn't a terrible match.
And that wasn't bad. It's just
it did its job. Yeah.
Luger was a specimen, man.
He really was.
You could wash your clothes on his wheelchair.
They, oh, They just had zero.
Chris nearly fainted.
Yeah. Clutches pearls.
I like Luger though. I was a big, and Luger was over.
Yeah, always he was over. He was every time always he voices
somebody up in that torture rack, brother. They were flashbulbs going off.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably could have used a mouthpiece.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And not Jimmy Hart, not someone who's like, oh, hey man, we're gonna have a big match. No, I don't need squeaky voice.
Hey brother.
Jimmy Hart, but not like there were any managers at WCW at the time anyway. Like there were no legit like talkers.
Mm-hmm. That Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah. Taskmaster. He wasn't that chiller, so I don't know how he
actually Booty Man.
Oh, wasn't he supposed to be there?
Yeah. Him and Andrew Anderson did not show up because Andrew Anderson he was doing bodyguard work for Ace Frehley. So he didn't go to chiller. And I don't know why Kevin Sullivan did it. I assume he was trying to hide some evidence.
Oh.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. Is Doug Dillinger the most Atlanta, Georgia? I'm the nephew and father to my daughter, niece, ever?
No, that's Tank.
Oh, boy. That Doug was really
Dillinger,
good.
Doug Dillinger is the only security guy from any wrestling company I ever would ever know the name of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was no standard security guy.
He was the original Butch Beaver.
Yeah.
Seriously. How about you, Dean, your rating on the show?
I didn't finish it today. I got halfway through the Bret Hart and mm-hmm. Macho match. I was telling George where you were off pulling your pod. There was just something about the match that I just couldn't get into for some reason. So I was like, yeah, this is close enough. You know, I just turned it off. But I obviously remember the pay-per-view from when Hall turned on Nash and stuff like that. But I overall did enjoy what I was watching. So I would give it like a 7, mm-hmm. 7.5 around there.
Okay, awesome. All right, so that wraps up Slamboree 1998. Next week we wrap up WCW for a little bit. We'll table World Championship Wrestling for about a month and a half, 2 months.
Are we going to start reviewing AEW stuff?
Whenever I decide to watch one of them, that would eventually God. I'll watch them.
Some fan.
After they're bought and their stuff goes up on Peacock.
So yeah, we'll be covering New Blood Rising next week. Cannot wait. Like, this will be the biggest crap show we've ever covered, and I'm so much looking forward to it.
Spoiler alert. It's a 0 out of 10 for me.
Too high.
Sorry, I set the bar too high.
It's okay. And then we are going to go right into, like I said, King of the Ring will take up all of June. So to, again, let everybody know, here's what's coming up in June. The following years of King of the Ring, 93, 95, 96. Everybody knows that one. 1998 and 2001. So all of these are I did 93 because that's the original. So we will talk about that. And then all the other ones have certain significance, obviously, to them. 95, I did because it's in Philadelphia and we're all local. So it's a good one to cover. And then the rest are just spectacular shows that we'll get into, with one of them being, you know, which we'll debate. Not debate, but we will discuss it. That's probably the second most important pay-per-view in pro wrestling history, I would say, right? King of the Ring is the birth of Austin 316, second to only the birth of the NWO. And we'll talk about, you know, which one is bigger than the other, and or just the significance of both, because, you know, that was, there it was. I mean, WWF had one shot and one opportunity. Yeah. And that was Austin 316. That was King of the Ring 1996. And we're going to talk about that in the third week of June. Cannot wait to get to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. All right. So at Hot Tag Podcast on Instagram, thank you guys very much for all the downloads. I really do appreciate it, especially everybody over in England. We have a massive contingency of fans in England.
Boy! And they love us in Blackpool.
I wonder if we have any like Canadian hey guys, English fans out there.
I'm leaving because I have to go number two.
That's okay. It's okay. Goodbye.
See you guys.
You know, for Dean Holzapp and George Rogers, I'm Chrissy Francesco. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week and weekend. Looking forward, man. New Blood Rising and then King of the Ring.
I'm telling you, Chris, I'm about two matches deep on it, and I immediately, at the start of the Judy Bagwell on a forklift match, I immediately turned it off. I was like, I need a palate cleanser, and I watched two Star Trek movies instead.
Perfect. I'm watching Wrath of Khan tomorrow, so I can't wait for that.
I watched that, and I watched Search for Spock today.
Oh, it's so good.
I might put on Star Trek 4 before I go to bed.
There you go. Beautiful. All right, guys. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week and weekend. And I'll catch you guys down the road. Check you guys out next week. New Blood Rising. So exciting. And then back to WWF, which is what people have been asking for. So thank you guys very much for your feedback. I'll see you guys next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.